Cubberty on 2FM with Super Value Travel Insurance. Holidaying at home or abroad? Don't worry about a thing with Great Value Travel Insurance at supervalue.ie.
10:35 this Friday morning here on 2FM. Amanda Palmer, I mentioned her just before playing that music. She's a rock star. She's a singer-songwriter. And she is now adding author to her list of talents. Good morning to you, Amanda.
Good morning. Hi.
It's nice to talk to you. The idea for your book came after a TED Talk. So what was your TED Talk about?
Our TED Talk was called The Art of Asking. And it was kind of about how my experiences as a busker, a street performer, sort of philosophically tied in with how I had a really successful Kickstarter later in my life when I was a full-time musician. And sort of how we have a hard time asking each other for help. Mm. And especially nowadays with all the crowdfunding going on and, you know, digital revolutions and artists kind of going, oh my God, how am I going to make money and how are things going to work? I sort of tackled it as this, you know, if the system that we've been working with is in the music business is going to fall apart, what are we going to replace it with? And a lot of it has wound up taking me into this fear of asking that a lot of artists and a lot of people have.
Because I suppose some people equate asking with begging, or begging with give us a favor, or just the hand out or the hat out, and people don't like that vibe.
Yeah, and a lot of it is just that it's misunderstood. I mean, most people are perfectly willing to, you know, or have been for years, to walk into a shop and pay $20 for a record without really realizing where that money goes and how the artists are supported. And it's sort of, now that the curtain is peeled back, everyone is sort of shocked by the blinding light of reality. Yeah. Of, you know, how this whole system actually works, and that artists actually, you know, are an important part of our lives, and that we don't want to live without art, but we do have to figure out a way to pay for it to exist.
So if you take the 20 books you talk about as and look at the album as a slice, as a big pizza, the artists get, what do they get, a child's portion of the pizza ultimately of that $20?
I mean, it depends. On some major labels, the artist gets nothing because they signed a terrible contract and they're not recouped. But, you know, nowadays with crowdfunding and, you know, a lot of artists going independent, it's just like an entirely new landscape, especially because now there's just millions of artists out there that you just don't hear about because the mainstream has changed. And you still have radio stations and you still got mass media, but so much stuff is going under the radar and people are just sort of relying on their smaller communities to, you know, pay their rent and feed their kids and pay for gas to go do shows. And that's a really unreported story because...
Yeah.
You know, since those people aren't megastars, the press doesn't gravitate towards them.
So you wanted your fans essentially to help you kickstart, if you like, the album that you wanted to make. And what was the figure you wanted to raise?
Well, that's actually, even the way you asked the question, it's kind of funny. I didn't want to do anything
right.
But go out and gauge how many people wanted the record. It was a big pre-order. And so, you know, I had a pretty good sense that I would probably sell at least $100,000 worth of pre-orders because I'm a pretty big size artist and I've sold, you know, in the tens and twenties of thousands of records before. So I figured that was a pretty legitimate goal. And it did a lot better than I thought. I pre-sold 25,000 records. And a lot of people bought upper level packages and house parties to their, you know, area of the world. And the Kickstarter grossed over $1 million, but wound up at the end of the day, 2 years later, breaking even pretty much.
Right.
But I made a lot of people happy, and I paid my way for 2 years.
Right. So, okay. So how do you break even after over $1 million raised?
Spending a lot of money for 2 years getting all over the world to deliver the packages. I mean, one of the dirty secrets of my Kickstarter is that the international packaging, which was kind of a nice random idea that we had in my office and didn't really crunch the numbers, the postage itself was $300,000.
Okay. Yeah,
you can start to see where the money goes. Yeah. Lots of manufacturing, lots of touring, lots of paying lots of people, and, you know, the money does disappear. Anyone who runs a small to medium-sized business knows that, you know, money like that can quickly get sucked in by just the manufacturing and the distribution of the product.
Did you listen to the people who gave out about you?
I mean, I listened to them. I listened to everybody.
Did you take them on board or ignore them?
I mean, it's impossible to ignore anybody, but I definitely know where I stand. One really nice thing about writing this book, which, you know, and the book isn't just about business and money and Kickstarter and crowdfunding. A lot of it is about life and my marriage and, you know, my best friend getting cancer in the midst of all this and having to make decisions about who to ask for help outside of, you know, the music business stuff. And, you know, the more criticism comes at me and the more I sort of turn around and do things like do this TED Talk or write a book or do interviews, the more I find myself defining what my philosophy is. And I sometimes really appreciate the critics. You know, sometimes I think if I hadn't had people questioning and criticizing me, I wouldn't have had to actually, like, knuckle down and explain why I believe what I believe. Mm. And so I look at it as helpful, even though, you know, there's some years, I mean, especially 2012, the year I put the Kickstarter out, I was just sort of, like, repeatedly, you know, stumbling into one internet controversy after another. But I always wind up coming out the other side stronger and smarter and sort of better defined, at least within myself.
Have you been in a position to define why people are afraid to ask for help? If we move it away from the music world and into the other side of your personal rather than professional life, have you kind of come up with a theory as to why we're so reluctant to say, listen, I'm in trouble here?
I don't know if it's so much of a theory as just really, I hadn't talked to a lot of human beings. Because also, people are very, very quick to say, oh, I'm really bad at asking. I'm really afraid of asking. You know, I really hate dealing with this part of my life or my relationship or my business or whatever. And a lot of it just comes down to how disconnected we are mm-hmm. from each other. And, you know, how kind of isolated and lonely we are and how little we realize that within a community, there's just a constant necessity of give and take. And sometimes you're on this side and sometimes you're on that side and sometimes you need a hand and sometimes you lend a hand. And I think we're so bizarrely separated from each other, you know, as human mammals. Yeah. And we live in fear of really being seen vulnerable or as, you know, draining too much from the situation of the community. And we don't really see our spot in the ecosystem as valid, you know, wherever we happen to be. And artists have an especially bad time with this because there's such a bizarre paradox of messages being sent to artists, which is like, on the one hand, you're this special genius and what you do is, you know, incredibly important and spiritual. And on the other hand, you know, you should be embarrassed to ask for that because you should be doing it just for the love of it. And then you've just got this really confused artist going, okay, well, on the one hand, I'm being told what I'm doing is really important. And on the other hand, I'm being told it's not important enough to get paid for. And that, you know, there's a real shame around asking to put value on the art. It can be really, really hard for people.
And was that an issue for you, for example, just chopping and changing from music to writing? Did you worry about people looking at you and thinking, why is she writing now and why should we take her seriously? I mean, did you have any self-doubt in that regard, or do you have the confidence to keep going?
I just sort of put that out of my mind. I figured, I mean, there was one really nice thing about the book, which was, you know, I considered self-publishing it because that's, you know, I've been self-publishing my music and putting my music out basically on my own label for the past 7 years. And instead, I, you know, took an advance from a giant mega publisher and did this book about as traditionally as possible. You know, I took my advance, I wrote it, I handed it in, I got my check. I'm splitting the money with the publisher and getting my royalty check. And I've got to say, you know, I don't regret that at all.
Good.
I think there's all sorts of systems for putting out art, and I really appreciate this giant publisher for taking the risk on me. And, you know, and I didn't want to go, I mean, starting a record label was hard enough. I didn't really want to go start a self-publishing book business. So, I mean, I sort of figured this book would definitely be read by my crowd and the artists and the crowd funders and the fans. And I just hoped that it would strike enough of a chord for other people who, you know, who are interested just in the topic. Because it's just like my TED Talk. It sort of started out aimed at artists, and then I realized that it hit this universal chord, which is everyone, you know, considers this question, which is, what am I supposed to ask for in my life, and what's too much, and what's too little, and what do I deserve? And I've found with the book, it really has hit that universal chord, and I'm really happy, you know, that it didn't just wind up in the art pile.
Yes, yeah, I understand. And you go to dark places too, which is a risk, I suppose, for yourself in terms of your own whether decision to give of yourself. In the book, you talk about being assaulted, sexually assaulted by a fan, and I think it was 2012 or thereabouts. And you talk about that you had an abortion, and after being told by doctors to do so. And, you know, these are things that not everyone would willingly give in a book.
Sure, but that's kind of my personal style. I'm very, you know, I've grown up in a small art community and a cult fan community where part of my trademark is I share what's going on. I don't share absolutely everything all the time, but I feel like one of the challenges of my life is to be as transparent as I can and as honest as I can with myself and in my art and with my fans. And, you know, one of the toughest things, especially about being a female, is, you know, anytime you talk about something personal, there's always some critic on the other side of the fence to sort of waggle their finger at you and tell you that you're just a flaming narcissist and you're saying all this stuff to get attention. But on the other hand, when you speak about those things, it invariably it resonates with people who have been through similar stuff and, yeah, you know, haven't been able to discuss it with anybody. Mm-hmm. And it opens up a really beautiful discussion of what we don't talk about.
We always say on this program, Amanda, that if we talk about things like that, very sensitive, very, very personal issues, the person who talking on the radio sometimes wonders, why am I even doing this interview? And you can be guaranteed, though, in a really positive way, that we'll get a heap of notes by email or text to say, thank you for making me feel a little less alone.
Yeah, that's the key, isn't it? I mean, that's what art is for, and ultimately that's, you know, that's what communication is for. And when you do it well, you know, you can judge art up and down and sideways, but if a song, whether it's, you know, regardless of genre, whether it's a dance pop song or a folk song or a, you know, bleeding heart emotional song, if any piece of art makes some human being feel less alone, it's a great piece of art.
I noticed Bono said that you're capable of anything, incapable of telling anything but the truth. You might as well pack up and go home now. You're grand. You got the nod from Bono.
And, you know, it was really nice that Bono said that, because we don't see eye to eye, him and I, about crowdfunding and stuff. I mean, he comes from that school of the music industry and, you know, the big 80s and 90s where they're really not into distributing totally free digital content in this way. I mean, this is also he gave me that quote pre-iTunes.
Okay. that's another story, isn't it?
That is another story. But the great thing about him is we were both at the TED conference at the same time, and he reached out to me and invited me out for a pint to just sit down and talk about this stuff, yeah, even though we had totally different opinions. And he was incredibly kind and you know, and there's other, you know, there's a lot of other artists there who would just say, oh, I don't agree with her, so I'm going to ignore her. And he actually said, oh, I disagree with her, so I want to meet her and I want to talk to her.
But that's a mark of the man, but also of yourself to say, yeah, I'm up for that. And the fact of the matter is that if there are two polar opposites, it makes for a much more engaging half an hour over a pint than two people sitting there saying how great each other is.
Yeah, absolutely. I think you need a little bit of both, actually.
Well, a bit of both. So, are you? You're expecting a baby? Is that right? Am I?
I am. Yeah.
Congratulations.
I'm 6 months pregnant and due in September, and and very happy.
And you're touring the world. Your husband, of course, will be well known to a lot of our listeners who love reading and Neil Gaiman. And he's is he? I don't know if he's traveling with you to Ireland, but either way,
he is.
Oh, he is good. Yeah. So you're 6 months pregnant, and you're running around telling the story, I should say. And you're going to be in Dalkey tomorrow by the sea, so you'll have a nice time there.
I am. I'm going to be at the Dalkey Festival doing a quick little show and a free book signing afterwards for people who can't afford to come in.
God,
and then I'm heading to the Academy and doing a proper music show at night, and Neil's going to be along with me. So it's special, secret special guessing, but not so secret now that I've said
it.
Now
that you've said it. So is it easy to perform music while you're, 6 months gone, as we say? Or what are you going to be, sitting down? Are you going to be rocking out? What happens?
I'm kind of sitting down and playing piano and standing up and playing the ukulele. It's actually not that bad, but I have been having more frequent lie downs than usual on the road.
I can imagine.
There's been lots of naps.
Just to keep yourself sane, I suppose. That's the more part. You'll be talking to Dave Fanning at the Dalkey Book Festival tomorrow at 4 p.m. about the art of asking. Amanda, it's been lovely to talk to you, and have a great time in Ireland.
Thank you so much. Nice to talk to you.
All the best. And that is Amanda Palmer there joining us live from, I think she's in the UK at the moment, and she's flying over this evening to talk to Dave tomorrow at the Dalkey Book Festival in Dublin. So all details will be on their website if you want to go there.